Broadcasting live from the Raiders practice facility at the Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center. This is the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Yep. I'm just sitting here going through my NFL mock drafts. It's that time of year again. We all love it. And as much as we, sometimes have to laugh at some of the mock drafts or shake our heads or scratch our heads or wonder what the heck is that guy thinking about or that gal thinking about, we're all susceptible to it. We all do our own mock drafts. We all look at all the mock drafts that are out there as if it has anything to do with anything. But it's that time of season, and we embrace that. We love it. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. We want your calls, 702-365-9200. And I tweeted right before we came on the air today, because it seems like the trend that I've been seeing, at least in some of the mock drafts that I've been looking at most recently, is that the Raiders might be leaning more toward in that first round, at least on the mock drafts. We don't know what the Raiders are thinking. We don't know what John Gruden has going on in that head of his, and Mike Mayock as well. What direction they're going to take in that first round, I think, I'm suspecting that they'll probably go offensive line because that's such a glaring hole right now at right tackle. But we don't know. Some of what I've been seeing lately is a lot of emphasis and a lot of leaning toward best defensive player available. And I've seen in some mock drafts them taking Micah Parsons from Penn State, the fabulous linebacker from Penn State that he didn't play last year, but when he was on the field in 2018 and 2019, he was a dominant player. And, there's a couple of red flags out there about him, which could result in a player that's probably at least a top five, top 10 caliber talent, maybe falling to number 17. I don't think there's any way if Micah Parsons was there at 17, the Raiders wouldn't be seriously interested in pulling the trigger on him. That's if he's there. And that's a huge if. He is really, really good. And at number 17, I'm not so sure that he's going to fall all the way there. But, there's J.C. Horn, the cornerback from South Carolina. There's Patrick Surtain, the cornerback from Alabama. Does he fall to number 17? Would the Raiders think about taking another cornerback in the first round as they did last year when they drafted Damon Arnett from Ohio State with the 19th pick overall. Jalen Phillips, the defensive end from Miami, who just had an incredible workout at the University of Miami. There's some concerns, obviously, with the concussions, and I think I just read that he tested positive for COVID-19. All thoughts and prayers with Jalen that he is okay from that. But bigger issue is the concussions that plagued him throughout his career. Where is he in terms of all that? There's Jeremiah Owusu-Koramara from Notre Dame, the linebacker from Notre Dame, playmaking linebacker from Notre Dame, who's kind of projected to go in that 16 to maybe 25 range. Kwity Paye, the defensive end from Michigan, is somebody that could be there. Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech. A lot of people think that he is the best defensive or cornerback in this draft, and there's some pretty darn good cornerbacks. I just mentioned J.C. Horn, and I just mentioned Patrick Surtain, but a lot of people think Farley is the best cornerback in this draft. So if you're the Raiders, and knowing that you have such a need at right tackle, do you, with that first pick, go defense? We know this, that the Raiders, based on last year, have a need for playmakers on defense. There's just no question about it. They were terrible in terms of forcing turnovers, forcing fumbles, interceptions, coming up with big sacks. They weren't good getting teams off the field on third downs. All of that points to the need for guys to get better. No doubt about that. But also to get playmakers, more playmakers onto that side of the field. I think they believe that they have with Yannick Ngakoue, who they signed as a free agent defensive end. They're hoping that, you know, Corey Littleton becomes more the player that he was with the Rams, and if so, that's a playmaker right there. But do you pull the trigger on a Caleb Farley? Do you pull the trigger on a Micah Parsons or a Patrick Surtain or a J.C. Horn? That's the question of the day. I think they're going to go tackle, and we'll go through some mocks that I think Raider fans would really like if it played out like that. But first, we're going to go out to the Raider Nation listener line. Frank from the Inland Empire, the IE, wants to talk about the Raiders. How you doing, Frank?
What's good, brother Vinny?
I'm doing really good. Thank you very much for asking.
Hey, I just I think unless something remarkable falls to the Raiders at 17, the only guys to really go and really target around 10, you know, to 17 position would be Surtain or Parsons, you know, and if they do get, you know, obtainable, you make a move. Other than that, I think that the right tackle position is probably just the safest bet if they stay put. But at the same time, they might even be able to slide back a couple numbers and still, you know, obtain another pick in the second or third round and still get that great, you know, right tackle. Other than that, you know, there's really no big playmakers that they need. There's going to be there, you know, around that area. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you look at what they did with the defensive line. I think there's power in numbers. I think that they have created obviously, Yannick Ngakoue, he's a guy that I almost think that Raider fans are kind of forgetting about him. But he's a really good football player and is going to change the dynamics of that defensive line. If you would have said a year ago that the Raiders would have gone into last season after trading for Yannick Ngakoue, I think Raider fans would be, you know, jumping up and down, you know, as happy as they can be, because he's that kind of a player. And I think, you know, because of the year that he had last year, and it was a weird year for him, he played for three different teams through the course of that calendar year, and that's tough to do. And I don't think his numbers were up to snuff compared to what he normally does. But if he reverts back to what he normally does do, the Raiders just got one of the premier pass rushers in the NFL. But there's always a need. And what I really like about this defensive coaching staff is they have the ability to be able to take a group of players and, you know, let's say the Raiders did get Micah Parsons. Let's say they did get Jalen Phillips. Let's say they did get Caleb Farley. They would, this defensive staff knows how to put players in positions to succeed. They would figure it out. I used to work for the Los Angeles Lakers, and Jerry West I learned so much from him, the general manager of the Lakers, about just figure it out. Get as many good players as possible. Let the coaching staff figure it out. So while it seems like, you know, they may be set at defensive line, maybe they are set at linebacker, bringing back all three guys from last year. Maybe they're set right now with their starting cornerbacks. You know, I don't think that they're in a place right now, if there's a premier player at any of those positions that pop up at number 17, that they're in a position to just say, no, you know, we'll play it safe necessarily with that right tackle. Although I do think that's the direction that they should go in. I think that they should get the right tackle. And just real quick, Frank, I'll throw this one at you. ESPN I'm just drawing a blank on whose mock draft I'm looking at here right now, but I will get you that in 1 second. Mel Kiper, his latest mock draft, just want to run this by Raider fans to see what you guys think, Frank included. He has the Raiders at number 17, taking Elijah Vera Tucker, the offensive lineman from USC, in the first round, number 17. Played guard primarily at USC, but really came into his own last year playing left tackle. I think he could play, based on the projections, he can play both positions, but most likely, if the Raiders got him, he would be the starting right tackle to start it all off. And then in the second round, at number 48, Richie Grant from the University of Central Florida. That's kind of the blueprint that I'm looking at, tackle safety. And depending on what tackle it is that you have your eye on, get that tackle at number 17 and then circle back to the safety at number 48. I'm throwing this out. If Frank is still on the phone with me and to Raider Nation in general listening, what would you think about that scenario playing out?
That's solid. I mean, that is a solid draft. That definitely is going to get the job done. I just want to put two things out there. I haven't heard too many people talking about Craven. And secondly, I really believe that the change with having Gus Bradley on is really going to unleash Solomon Thomas. I don't think people are really recognizing what that guy brings to the table. Sticking him in the middle with his explosiveness is really going to do wonders for not only Yannick, but also for Mac and also Cleedy. They're going to break loose. That guy is an animal in the middle. Nobody's put him at a three technique yet. So having him in the middle is going to be a game changer, and I think it's also going to help Hurst. But that other guy, I'm talking about Craven. Everybody's talking about I can't pronounce his name. What do they call him? The other linebacker.
From Notre Dame?
Yes, exactly.
Just call him Jeremiah.
There you go. I like that. That's easy for him. Jeremiah. There you go. But, you know, talking about Craven, I mean, the guy is he's big. He's not as fast.
Which linebacker are we talking about, Craven?
Craven, I think he's out of Tulsa.
Okay, right. Okay, gotcha. Let me get his.
So now we're talking about the dynamic players, and that's my whole point. I mean, do we really have a difference maker? And the only true difference makers that would hang around for the Raiders at that period would be, you know, let's say a Surtain falls, or let's say for some reason because of off field issues, Parson falls. But you know, when we're talking about Craven.
You're referring to Zaven Collins from Tulsa.
Zaven Collins. Exactly. Now, I mean, gosh, that is a game changer.
Yeah, and you know, I guess the question is, if you're the Raiders, how good do you feel about where your linebackers are right now? I mean, you know, you're bringing back Corey Littleton, you're bringing back Nick Kwiatkowski, you just re-signed Nicholas Morrow. Granted, I think Nicholas was on a 1-year deal, so. It's the first time that I recall since John Gruden got back that he's bringing back all three of his starting linebackers, which is kind of crazy when you think about that. But in and of itself, I don't know exactly what it means, but at least there's continuity finally at that position. And along those lines, I know the Raiders are very
true, Vinny. But the thing is, last year they weren't good. So now we're hoping with the change of Gus Bradley, they'll be solid to good. But will they be great? You know, we anticipate, you know, Littleton coming in and being a very, very good to almost great linebacker. Everybody else will be, we'll be very happy if they're good. But bringing in somebody like you said, Collins, if bringing in somebody like him or bringing in like a Parsons and adding to that crew, wow, now that's a difference maker.
Yeah, and I think Parsons, without question, if Parsons is there at number 17, it would behoove the Raiders to get involved in that because he's just too good. Yeah. I'd have to do a little bit more studying on the Tulsa kid. I've heard good things about him. I've watched some film. He doesn't wow me, you know, like Micah does. But there's a reason why Collins is projected to go in the, you know, 18-20s, and Parsons, if everything was, you know, copacetic with him and the red flags. Is a top five, top 10 kind of a player. You can see the difference in that. So somebody like Micah, I think that the Raiders, regardless of what their needs are, starting, you know, trying to fill some starting holes, whatever the case may be, Micah Parsons is somebody you have to draft and figure it out because he's that good. And there's a chance, you know, that he's going to be, you know, falling in that direction. We'll see. There are issues, and you know, it's been talked about. So, you know, we'll see if that causes him to fall, and if he does, you know, would the Raiders pull the trigger on a player of you know, that kind of caliber? But also, you know, when you're talking about that defensive line, a name that keeps coming up when I talk to my Raider peeps is Darius Filon. Who they signed as a free agent as well, kind of a defensive tackle, versatile player who, when he's been on the field, he's been productive. There's a reason why the Arizona Cardinals signed him, you know, after he had played for the San Diego and Los Angeles Chargers. He gave him a fairly decent contract, had high hopes for him going into the 2019 season. There was an off-field incident. It's cost Darius 2 years of playing. That's gotten resolved now, and it's behind him. And now he's on the Raiders. And in talking to Raiders people, they're like, don't sleep on Darius Phylon. They feel like they have a sleeper. And they also feel like they have somebody that is raring to go at that position after missing 2 years. You know, when something gets taken away from you like that, like it was Darius, and look, you know, he had a role in it, so no apologies, not trying to pass judgment on anything, but there was a role that he played in that you know, you know, the him not being able to play for a couple of years. So part of that's on him. But the point is, it's behind him, and now he's ready to go. And you would think that he's ready to make up for lost time by getting out there and playing as well as he possibly can. Also, and I mentioned this yesterday, and this I wrote a story that's going to be coming out. In, I think it's on Wednesday. It's scheduled to run, on Thursday. But it's on Tanner Muse, and I had a chance to talk to Tanner Muse yesterday at length. Very interesting conversation about, you know, where he is physically, what it was that he was dealing with last year, and the surgery that alleviated it. And he's raring to go now. And this is a guy who, you know, when he was healthy at the scouting combine last year, this is a guy who ran a 4.41, I think it was, 40. Just a kind of a freak show at the scouting combine last year at 6'2", 230 pounds, you know, running like the wind, doing, you know, a whole bunch of great stuff athletically. And this toe issue that he had been dealing with since really in college, and it was just kind of described to him as a turf toe injury that, you know, basically just needed rest and all that kind of stuff. And it never got to a point where he couldn't play at Clemson, so he kind of gritted his teeth and played through it. Took some time off after his senior year. Everything seemed great. He goes to the combine and obviously, you know, blew the roof off with his testing numbers and his athletic ability. So felt like, you know, he was completely behind this issue, only to get to training camp last year. And almost immediately after getting on the field, the issue, you know, reared its ugly head again. And it was just too much. And I can remember I told him this. I go, man, I'm over there watching you on the sidelines going, something's up, you know, because he didn't look like the player that he looked like on film. Without, you know, the athletic ability wasn't there, the burst wasn't there, the speed wasn't there, the suddenness wasn't there. He just looked on the slower side. And at first I'm thinking, as I was watching him during training camp, well, you know, maybe this is a guy that's making the move from safety to linebacker. And you know, maybe it's kind of weighing him down a little bit, all the thinking, all the where am I supposed to be, what's this look, what's my responsibility, you know, when the offense is lined up in that kind of formation. And keep in mind, he wasn't just learning how to play linebacker after playing safety in college. He was learning to play all three linebacker spots, all three of them. And as he said to me, he goes, you know, you have to at this level because this ain't college where you got 120 players out there that you're rotating in and next man up, you know, next man, next man, next man. You could go really deep in a college depth chart to go find an answer in case there's an injury. In the NFL, it's 53 dudes, and every spot is important. And so you have to know how to play all three of those spots if you're a linebacker, just as if you're an offensive lineman. You know, at least a couple of those guys have to know how to play guard and tackle, and some of them need to play guard, tackle, and center for that matter. So there's a lot of cross-training because, you know, holes need to be filled. So, you know, I'm thinking when I'm watching Tanner last year, all right, you know, he's just kind of weighed down because of the new roles that he's learning. But even still, I'm like, man, something doesn't look right. You know, and so what he had told me was, well, you weren't the only one who noticed that. You know, the coaches did as well. And they're like, all right, what's up? And so they finally figured out what it was that he was dealing with. And, you know, there's a term for it, but basically it's the tendon in your big toe. There's two bones in your big toe, and there's a tendon that's attached to it. And sometimes those become inflamed. And there's a term for it. And usually just rest is what ultimately saves the day. And so that's what they thought at first would help with Tanner. But then they gave him a shot. There was an injection. Nothing worked. And so they finally figured out that the only thing that's really going to work here is surgery. And so they had to go into that toe. And this is very normal, so don't freak out. But they just take one of the bones out. They take the one of those bones out, and you're good to go after that. And so they ended up getting the surgery. He's good to go now. He's out. He told me that he's been here in Henderson all year long. Been very diligent about coming to work here at the facility, which is where I am today. And he's raring to go. And that's a guy that, you know, go look at what his stats were. I know he played safety, but at Clemson, what he's able to do athletically, the nose that he has for the ball, his coverage attributes. He's somebody that I think is going to push for some playing time next year. And at the very least, he's going to do what they expected him to do right off the bat, which is be a heck of a special teams player. And that's something that you can't discount. Go look at Corey Littleton. That's the example that I always use. His first couple of years with the Rams, when there were other linebackers that were playing in front of him, he didn't let that deter him from not making an impact. That dude was blocking punts, returning, you know, punt returns for touchdowns. He was figuring out ways to be a really good playmaker in special teams. And we all know that special teams is important. And I think at the very least, Tanner Muse is going to have an impact in that regard. So good news for Tanner that he's going to be back here in the huddle. Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila and Bajador. Keep the calls coming. We'll talk to you on the other side.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. You're in the huddle, Vinny Bonsignor. Brought to you by Tequila and Bajador. Just responding to a tweet right now. Somebody asked me on Twitter, is there any chance if the Raiders traded up in the first round to draft a young quarterback, like maybe a Trey Lance, with Derek Carr's contract coming up? And I was trying to find the right kind of no. That's not happening. They're not trading for a quarterback in that first round. And they may draft a quarterback. I'm not ruling that out at all. When you look at the Raiders' depth chart at quarterback, Marcus Mariota is here, but he's only here for one more year. If that, I would imagine that at some point there might be some teams that are looking at Marcus Mariota as potentially somebody that can help them out this year. And I know that, you know, Marcus Mariota has some control of that situation with a, you know, he has a no trade clause in the contract reportedly. But that doesn't mean that he can't get traded. What he's saying basically is, all right, I'll take the pay cut from $10.7 to $3.7 million. However, now that I am an even more attractive trade piece because I'm not making as much money, I don't want you to just send me anywhere. And nothing against my good friends in Detroit, but if you're Marcus Mariota, you might be saying, I don't want to go to Detroit. I don't want to go to Jacksonville to be Trevor Lawrence's backup. I don't want to go here or there. The Chicago Bears, you know, aren't happy with their quarterback situation. Yeah, I wouldn't mind going to Chicago. So, yeah, we could do that. The Washington Football Club, Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's not working out. Yeah, wouldn't mind going there. So it gives Marcus Mariota some control. So anyway, there's that, right? So he is on the under contract for one more year, and like we just said, if that, Nathan Peterman is still here. So he's been here for a couple of years, but there's no long range contingency plan for Derek Carr. Now I'm not saying the Raiders are going to draft his heir apparent. I'm not saying that at all, but it's never a bad thing to develop a young quarterback. That quarterback, you know, you have him under contract for the next 4 years. as Derek Carr's backup, somebody that you're going to be able to develop. John Gruden could get his hands on him and kind of mold him into the kind of quarterback that he's envisioning, so that if something were to happen, you'd have an in-house option that you're comfortable with, and a young quarterback that you're comfortable with as Derek Carr's backup. The New England Patriots have also shown that it's never a bad idea. They were never trading Tom Brady, were they? Yeah, it didn't stop them from drafting Jimmy Garoppolo. Didn't stop him from drafting Jacoby Brissett. Didn't stop him from drafting Matt Cassel. There's been some others as well. So they always understood the importance, not just of having a good solid backup from an in-house option that you've drafted and developed, but somebody that, you know, chances are he might get out on the field a couple games here, a couple games there, if the quarterback goes down, gets hurt, whatever the case might be. And if he just so happens to have some good performances, now all of a sudden teams are saying, hey, who's Jimmy Garoppolo? You know, he wouldn't be a bad option and trade something of value for a Jimmy Garoppolo or a Jacoby Brissett or whoever the case might be. There's precedent for something like that. You know who got traded for a second-round pick, believe it or not? Way back in the day. Yeah, a guy by the name of Brett Favre was drafted by the Atlanta Falcons, and, you know, that it didn't work out in Atlanta. I forget how many years he was there. I think it was just 1 year. But the next thing you know, he gets traded to the Green Bay Packers, and was a backup for part of one season, and all of a sudden the starter gets hurt. And there goes Brett Favre to the Green Bay Packers. So just because, you know, for the Raiders, if you're thinking about drafting a young quarterback to develop behind Derek Carr as his backup, and maybe who knows what the future might hold if that player turns out to be really good, maybe he is the heir apparent to Derek Carr. Or maybe he's just somebody that, you know, gets on the field periodically and puts out some good tape, and somebody's willing to say, hey, you know, we'll give you a third round pick for him. We'll give you a second round pick for him. There's plenty of history of that happening in the NFL. Matt Hasselbeck, he was with the Green Bay Packers and then got traded to the Seattle Seahawks, if I remember correctly. I have to check that out. So there were quarterbacks at the Green Bay Packers drafted behind Brett Favre a couple of times that ended up going, you know, other places, getting traded to other places. Obviously, they drafted Aaron Rodgers, and he ended up being the heir apparent to Brett Favre. So yeah, but I wouldn't think that they're gonna trade up for him. I think it's a big year. Let's not sugarcoat it. This is a big year for the Raiders. It's a big year for John Gruden and this staff. There's patience that's being shown. That's why John Gruden got that 10-year contract. I think everyone in this building here in Henderson understood back in 2018 that this was going to be a tall order to get it right. The plan or the vision wasn't to just, hey, slap a Band-Aid on it. Let's get some wins under our belt. Let's go, make a playoff run real quick, with some veteran players and do something for the short term at perhaps, risking the long term. But that's what the Raiders have been doing for, far too long. And I think Mark Davis understood it's not working. How we've been doing it just isn't working. So what he decided was he'd rather have long-term success, or give somebody that he respected and believed in, and that's John Gruden, a long enough contract in order to get it right. And I know everyone just focuses on the money, but to me, there's a lot of laziness when people interpret things and read into things, and they read into things extremely lazily, and they just hone in on the obvious. Oh, it's so much money. It was a money grab. It wasn't a money grab. It was, if I'm going to come back, I want to be able to come back to a situation where I know I've got time to do it right. And Mark Davis said, if I'm going to go down this road with John Gruden, who I want to be here, I'm going to do it right. And I'm going to give him the time that's necessary to get it right. Not for short-term success, but to build a foundation that can put this franchise in a position to be able to win on the long haul. I know that it's so obvious to look at. It's a 10-year contract and, you know, $100 million. Oh, my gosh. It's just, you know, silliness. But they're not looking at the reasons that you do that. And I got to say, I'm doing a story right now. That's going to come out during the draft for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. That's my day job. I cover the Raiders for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And, you know, it's just – the gist of the story is kind of power structures, how power structures are set up in the NFL. Sometimes it's the head coach who has the final say. Sometimes it's the general manager who has the final say. Sometimes it's kind of convoluted where you don't really know who has the final say. I heard some interesting stories from a team that will at this point remain nameless where a few years ago they didn't have a – established power structure, like who had the final say. And some of the people that I've been talking to around the league, it's imperative that you define somebody who has or designate somebody who has the final call. You know, not to say that that person has to be power hungry and have all the answers. Nobody has all the answers. And anyone who thinks that, the wrong person for the job. And the right way to do it is to talk things out, get a consensus, have a collaborative effort between your scouts, your general manager, your head coach, whoever, and whoever's part of that process needs to have a voice, needs to be listened to, respected, and heard. Everyone should be able to feel comfortable about sharing their thoughts, their ideas, and it doesn't matter if they can get rowdy in those meeting rooms where guys are, you know, and guys and gals that are part of it, slamming their hands on the desk, arguing for what they think is right. That's all fine and good. In fact, it's healthy and it's positive. Sometimes the best decisions come out of that collaborative effort. The way it has to happen ultimately is that it's 99% collaboration, but 1% somebody has to make the final call. You have to be able to have that. You have to give somebody that power to be the ultimate decider. Otherwise, you have, and it was expressed to me today in talking to somebody, you know, if too many people think that they have the power or the ear of the owner, let's say, then you just have chaos. You need to have a direct line owner, the person that's making the final call, and then everyone that helps get him to that point or her to that point. That's how the great leaders do it. And in John Gruden's case here in Las Vegas, John Gruden has the final say on personnel matters. But he from everything that I've been that I'm hearing. And there's old scouting reports out there about John and you know, could be a little bit maniacal, falls in and out of love with, you know, players and, you know, always wants to go with the veteran players rather than the young players. Well, all I ask people to do is let's look at the facts here these last couple of years. Only wants veteran players. The Raiders are one of the youngest teams in the NFL. In case you haven't noticed, always wants his guy. Was immediately, upon getting hired, going to trade Derek Carr, get rid of Derek Carr to go get his guy. It's 2021. Derek Carr is not only here, he is the established quarterback and the trusted partner of John Gruden moving forward. Where's the John Gruden that everyone said was falling in and out of love with players and only relying on, only wanted veteran players, doesn't want to play any young players. I haven't seen that John Gruden. And I'm here to tell you, in talking to some people in the NFL, that's probably, there's a sign of two couple things. You know, people evolve, people grow up a little bit, people figure out, hey, maybe that wasn't the right way to do it the way I did it 15 years ago. I need to change. So people get better, they evolve, the good ones do. But it's also a sign that John Gruden has security. John Gruden understands that there's a right way to do it, it's no guarantee the way that we are doing it is going to get us to the Super Bowl. Nobody can guarantee anything like that. But we feel good about how we're going about it, and we're going to take the necessary time to get this to a point where it's a long-range proposition in terms of success rather than a short-term. And sometimes doing that means sacrificing some – not sacrificing, but struggles along the way, because you're trying to get it right, not just right, but right. And so the John Gruden that was in a rush to go get veteran players and win right now. Let's just win right now. Forget the future. Let's win right now by getting older players and more veteran players and more experienced players. That John Gruden has not existed here with the Raiders the second time around. The John Gruden here is playing young players left and right. I mean, last year that defense was probably one of the youngest defense in the NFL. So, and it just goes to show that he's like, okay, you know, we have to invest in these young players in playing time, even if it means some struggles along the way, because we believe that these players are going to be good eventually, and not just be good, be very good. And we're willing to put that time in. And I know that I'm going to be here to see it on the other side. It might not work out. There's no guarantees that it'll work out. When we get back on the other side, I'll talk about a conversation that I had with Pete Carroll when he took over the Seattle Seahawks, and he had final say. And what he told me about, I'm not so sure this is going to work, but this is how I feel it has to be. We'll talk about that on the other side, but interesting to hear some thoughts outside of the building here in Henderson about how John Gruden is going about things right now. It's not the old John Gruden. That scouting report is no longer exists, and part of the reason why is because he's got security, and he feels that he's got the necessary time to get this right. It may not turn out right. Nobody has all the answers. Nobody can guarantee anything. But he has the time and the security to do it as he sees fit. And part of that is investing time and you know, in order to get this right in a right kind of way. You're in the Huddle with Eddie Monsieur, brought to you by Tequila and Buffer.
You're listening to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. Now, back to your host, Vinny Bonsignor.
What's good, Raider Nation? Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio 920 AM. You're in the Huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. Going back to look at Pete Carroll, his first couple of years back, when he came back with Seattle, and first year was 7-9, and then they go out and get a guy by the name of Russell Wilson, and all of a sudden they're 11-5. But there were 2 years where it was just okay, and they're drafting a bunch of young players and getting better, and those drafts of 2010 and 2011, even though it didn't show immediate results those first couple of years, it got them to a point where now they plug in Russell Wilson, and away they go. And if you look at the Raiders and what they've been doing with, you know, there's been gradual progress. Just go look at the records these last 3 years. They've steadily gotten a little bit better. And obviously, it hasn't happened as quickly as fans would hope. But again, going back to the conversation about John Gruden and some of how, you know, people around the league are viewing him, it's kind of like he understands that there's time, that he has security to be able to make decisions that might not result in short-term success, but could put the Raiders in position to be viable contenders for a long period of time, because what they're trying to do is build primarily through the draft. Now, a lot of that is predicated now on some of these young players taking big steps forwards. There's nothing to suggest that, you know, any of these guys can't do that. DeMond was railing during the break about Jonathan Abram. You know, obviously Jonathan Abram needs to get better, and I think this is an important year for Jonathan Abram because now he's in a different system with a different coaching staff. I think a better defensive line. I think he learned a lot of lessons last year that, you know, in some of the reckless ways that he played football. If he can learn from that, he's got the talent to be a good football player, but he has to do it. And we'll see if in this system – with, you know, Gus Bradley and with a better defensive line in front of him and you would think a better linebacker crew in front of him, if Corey Littleton, you know, gets his act together, that's going to help him back there. And there isn't a secondary in the NFL that's worth anything if there's a bad defensive line in front of them. It doesn't work that way. You can't ask guys to cover for extended periods of time over and over and over again. Now, Jonathan Abram has to – there's things that he did last year that had nothing to do with the defensive line. He just needs to eliminate those issues from the game. And they're not physical issues. He's got all the physical attributes that you need to excel at that position. He can run. He can hit. He's physical. I think playing closer to the line of scrimmage where and defending in smaller spaces, which that's what he's going to be asked to do in the system, is going to help him tremendously. But now he's got to, now he has to deliver. And, you know, I think, Devon, is there something that you wanted to share at all?
About what exactly? Well, what were we talking about during the break?
Yeah, exactly.
It was just on that last segment there. You're just like, it's just giving Gruden just like too much of the benefit of the doubt of him needing time. Or because to me, it just seems like he has all the time in the world to just like not say mess up, but just throw whatever at the wall and just see what sticks.
Yeah, but I mean, is that what you think is happening? You know, they've invested. You know, I don't see that they're just throwing things out there. You know, they've addressed the secondary. They've addressed the defensive line. I think their offense is last year was one of the best offenses in the NFL. There's some ways to improve that, obviously, and I think that bringing in some of the help that they've brought in can help that, has a chance to help that. I think defensively, they've been a year behind the offense throughout, and it's time for that to change. And that means some of these younger players that they've drafted getting better. I think coaching needs to improve, and I think there's a conventional wisdom that Gus Bradley will, but I don't see that they're just throwing things up against the wall hoping that it sticks. I think there's definitely been a plan. They've invested high draft picks in cornerback. They've invested a high draft pick at safety. They've invested high draft picks on the defensive line. They went out and got Yannick Ngakoue. They knew all throughout last year this isn't getting it done with this pass rush, obviously. That is first and foremost. And if I had a dollar for every time I heard from this building, somewhere in this building in Henderson, first and foremost, got to get that pass rush in order next year. And I think, you know, unless Ngakoue just forgets how to play football, I think he's going to address that. So that, to me, is a good move. And the moves that they've made on the defensive line has been good. I just don't get that any kind of a notion that they're just throwing things up against a wall and hoping it sticks, Devon.
Maybe I'm just not as optimistic because it's just those things where you say they address the secondary or just one signing of Carl Joseph. I don't think that that's enough addressing.
I don't think that they're – I mean, but again, it's April. We haven't even seen the draft yet. You have to wait to see what happens in the – if they get a Richie Grant that they could plug in at starter – now are you seeing that? Yeah, they addressed this. They did address the secondary just because they haven't, you know, signed a free. Yeah, just because they haven't signed a made a big splash at free safety, and doesn't mean that they're not going to address it or have plans to address it. We're gonna go out to the Raider Nation listener line. Gangster Raider wants to talk about the Raiders. How you doing, Gangster Raider? Gangster Ray, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, man.
Can you hear me?
I got you, brother.
Yeah, I agree with DeMond. It seems like he's just trying stuff, and you know what I mean, just trying to make stuff stick. And in this draft, please don't draft no more Clemson players. It seems like they fall in love with Clemson players, and the only ones that's really stepped up is Hunter Renfrow and Klee. You know what I'm saying? Tanner Muse, even though you said about his foot or whatever, but that was a wasted draft pick unless he redeems himself this year. You know what I mean? And look at the what he does. He the one that bought in Paul Gunther. He's the one that fired Coach Buckner and bought in Fraud Marinelli. He's the one that also
Trayvon Mullen went to Clemson. Trayvon Mullen has been a good solid player, and I think his arrow is pointing up. So you know,
yeah, he's been hit and miss off and on, but I wouldn't say he was a Well, I guess you're right. You know what I'm saying? I guess he is one of you. Him, Klee, and Hunter Renfrow. All the other Clemson players have been, you know, not what they've been advertised.
Yeah, it's only been one. It's only been one, and that's 10. Yeah, it's only been
a goody two-shoe. We need Rough Riders. You know what I'm saying? All this choir boys and stuff. We need more players like Incognito. You know, get back to the old Raiders. That's why I think we needed to bring in Earl Thomas. You know what I'm saying? We don't need a bunch of choir boys. That's why we only going to win 8 games. That's why I'm glad to go into 17 games, because 8 games will not be a winning season. Or you know what I'm saying? You need to win more than 8 games to have a non-losing season. You understand what I'm saying? And Gruden just trying stuff. So like he's just throwing against the wall and it won't stick. And I think he's affecting Mike Mayock, because Mike Mayock was an adult, seemed like, when he first came to the organization. But Gruden's immaturity has bled into him, and it seems like the only adult in the building now is Mark Davis. You know what I'm saying?
So what's it going to – all right, what's it – I get that you and DeMond, obviously, are in a rush to judgment on these young players. I mean, you know, you're talking about
Think about it. He got traded in the first place because Al Davis saw that he didn't know how
forget
to
about all that. Forget about all that. Forget about all that. You know, it just seems like
he proven Al Davis right. It seems like he's proven Al Davis Al Davis saw that he wasn't the coach. That's why he traded him, and he's still coming back doing all this stupid stuff. And we still have one.
But
have
what stupid?
He's been here.
What stupid stuff are you talking about?
I mean, first bringing in Paul Gunther. That was dumb. He hadn't been really a good Paul.
All right, so.
Then firing Buckner. Why would you fire Buckner when that was the best part of our defense? The defensive line was the best part of our defense when he was here. You fire him, bring in Fraud Marinelli, and that sabotaged the whole defense. And everybody went, oh, that's not on Gruden. Everybody seemed like Gruden is absolved from that. That's Gruden exactly.
I think obviously the Gunther decision was, it didn't work out. No question about it.
The Buckner decision to
end. I'm not with you on that.
What did Fraud Marinelli do? How many sacks did our defensive line have this year? We regressed, and that sabotaged the whole defense. And can you see that?
Yes. The defensive line didn't get the job done, but I'm not.
That was Gruden. That's because of Gruden. That was Gruden's decision. Everybody want to absolve Gruden of everything, and he's the one.
I'm not absolving him of any decisions of that.
But what has he done good? What has he done good that worked?
Is Derek Carr a good quarterback? Better quarterback than
he
was.
He didn't draft Derek Carr. Derek Carr was there when he got there. That was from the previous.
It's just strictly who he brought in. That's all you're not how guys got coached.
He brought in the players and the coach.
All right, Derek Carr is a better quarterback today than when he was when John Gruden got here. The guy that everyone thought was going to get traded. Hold on. I guess Josh Jacobs is nothing. I mean, Darren Waller, forget about Darren Waller. I mean, anybody could have gotten Darren Waller. It was just so happened to be John Gruden who got him from off the scrap heap from the Baltimore. We're not going to give John Gruden any credit. Darren Waller. Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow, I guess, you know, forget about him.
I said Hunter Renfrow. I said the only two good dudes from Clemson.
You're already writing off last year's draft class and the year before that draft class. You're just writing them off. In Gangster Raiders' mind, if you're not an all pro or a productive player within your first or second year, you're just a bust, right? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying you're a bust. I'm just saying that is it working? You know, so we've been getting the same thing over year after year. We get players, they do all right, they're not world beaters, but they just all right, and we still get.
But is there any point in time where you go, hey, there's also something to be said about just having some patience in letting young guys develop? Is that any part of the plan that you have, or does it have to happen right now? And if it doesn't happen right now, it's just a mistake. And somebody needs to be blamed for that. Or do you have any part of you that says, hey, you know, there's been some successes. A guy like Damon Arnette has a future, but are you writing him up? You're writing Tanner Muse off because he had a toe injury that cost him all last season. But no, he's a goody two shoes.
Look at us as a team. We're getting further and further back.
That's not true. You're actually getting closer and closer and closer.
In the division, the Chargers have passed us up. They got a better quarterback than we have.
What was the record against the division last year?
We was, I think, 4-2.
And you should have beat the Kansas City Chiefs, right? So 5-1. I mean, let's just say, we'll say what it is. 4-2 is getting further and further away from the division.
But look, if it wasn't for that last second play by Isaiah Johnson, we'd have got swept by the Chargers. A rookie quarterback.
They made the play. They won the game. They won the game. They won the football game.
They could have called interception.
But you're saying they're getting further and further away from the division, yet they were 4-2 against their division last year. They were seconds away from winning three other games. Obviously, they didn't get it done. In my mind, they weren't ready to get it done last year. But that doesn't mean they're not getting closer. You keep saying they're getting further and further away when
I'm talking about in the division. We getting passed up.
You were 4-2
Kansas City.
You were 4-2. You should have beaten the Kansas City Chiefs twice.
If you look at it realistically, the Chargers have a better team than us. They have a better quarterback. They got a better defense, and they got a better secondary. Think about it.
The Raiders were seconds away from beating the Chargers twice last year, and you keep telling me that the Chargers are just flat out better. They swept the Denver Broncos last year. They should have swept the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I'm not saying they're on the Kansas City Chiefs level, but I am saying in two games where the Kansas City Chiefs were at full strength, the Raiders were seconds away from sweeping the Kansas City Chiefs. Beat them at full strength in Kansas City. No other team except for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the Super Bowl can make that claim. So I'm not buying that they're getting further and further away from the division. I'm just not. Nothing proves that. They were 4-2 against the division last year. Should have been 5-1. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore, brought to you by Tequila and Bahadur.